listening to The Fret Files, the Guitar Workshop Podcast with Eric Daw.
Send in your question or comment. To participate in the show, you can text or call 757-774-8482. Or to email the show, you can go to my website, ericdaw.com. That's ericdaw.com. Click the contact link and send your question or comment there. We'll use it as part of the show. Yes, indeed. Welcome to the show. It's the Fret Files Podcast, the Guitar Tech Podcast. My name is Eric Daw. I'm a longtime guitar builder and repairman. I referred to myself as a guitar janitor.
Oh, yeah?
Not long ago on...
a groundskeeper?
On Instagram, which I thought was, you know...
Yeah.
That's apropos.
Janitation technician.
As they say.
Yeah.
My co-host today is my buddy Nat. Hello, Nat.
Hello. Hi. I didn't know how far we were going to take it. Well, thanks for welcoming me. Greetings. I will read the listener's questions, and Eric will answer them the best he can, drawing on his experience and opinions. Oh, yeah, you added that addendum. What's on your bench lately, Eric?
I have been working feverishly on a bunch of restorations.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah.
Is there any other way to work on restorations but feverishly?
No.
Probably not.
Definitely feverishly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was posting some photos of this telebody that I filled the routes in. It, like, had this crazy nasty...
Oh, no.
...route that looked like somebody had chewed into
it. It was a crime. Against humanity, pretty much.
Maybe used a blunt... object to route out a neck pickup cavity. And somebody online said, what was going on with that? Why did they route it out like that? What did they route it out for?
Yeah.
And my answer to that was, do I know?
Yeah,
I'm just the janitor here. I'm just the guitar janitor.
Yeah.
Right? So once the mess is made,
about it.
I'm just cleaning it up. I'm just cleaning up the mess.
Yeah, ours is not to wonder why. Ours is but to do and die.
Do or die?
I think it was do and die. You'd still die anyway in the
well, I guess Tennyson, that's where we're all headed. Yeah. Hey, this got heavy fast.
Yeah, but I think you brought out a very good point about this desire for reason and certainty. I want to know why something happened. And, buddy, that's a recipe for madness.
Well, you can't, Well, so the guy who brought me the guitar to fix bought it from a guy who 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 might know.
Yeah, you gotta launder it, though.
Who cares at this point? Like, the damage is done. God only knows what they were trying to accomplish. It's like when a headstock is broken. Like, what happened? Well, the headstock broke. Yeah. Who cares, really, what happened at this point?
What's the narrative
situation?
Let's
fix it.
No, it broke.
Yeah.
Well, that's good that you fixed it. Is it done? Is that one get finished?
Oh, it's almost done. Yeah. It's painted and cured, and I'm working on, you know, doing the lacquer checking is kind of a time consuming process.
Rather tedious.
Well, it's not super tedious. It just takes, so I freeze them and then gently warm them up several times.
You freeze fry them, huh?
So it just takes a while. It's not tedious. It just, you take them out of the freezer, you hang them.
Just takes a little time.
For a while.
Do you say that you unthaw them, being from southeastern Idaho?
No. Unthaw?
That's what we say when you take something out of the freezer.
Really?
Let's unthaw the tater tots. Yeah, people say that all the time.
Oh, I don't think
I had to unthaw the ground beef.
Yeah, I don't think I say that.
Okay.
I say thaw.
Good.
Thaw is already...
Yeah, it's totally sufficient. People say that all the time. We've got to unthaw them things. Yeah.
Hey, we got a message from our sponsor. Let me sip some Apex coffee while we play this for you.
Yeah, hold on. Have a little sip.
Hey guys, Frank Gross from Thunder Row Guitars, and here's my current shop favorite. 2004 Fender Custom Shop Mark Kendrick Masterbuilt Eric Clapton Stratocaster in gold leaf. Gold leaf is probably one of my personal favorite oddball colors from the Fender Custom Shop, and this guitar looks absolutely amazing. This guitar is super comfy to play, has a nice V-shaped neck profile, and is just a wonderful sounding Strat. Super clean, gold hardware, highly figured neck. Stop by the shop and give it a spin.
Yeah, that gold leaf does look cool.
That is really neat.
That's from Thunder Road Guitars in Seattle. It's got a soft V-neck too, which I love. That's what my main guitar has, a soft V-neck.
It's pretty similar, huh? Yeah. That's a great guitar you got there.
But that gold leaf is cool. It kind of looks like Shoreline Gold from a distance, but
it's got that texture of applied gold leaf.
Yeah. Yeah, which is I've never done that. That'd be a fun one to learn how to do. Well, yeah.
You better lacquer it down good once you get it on there.
Yeah, right?
I don't know how they do that.
I'm sure they do. Well, think about like the weird late 60s wallpaper guitars they did, like the Paisley guitars, you know?
They have to do like one of those poker chip tables and bottle cap tables in the bars.
Oh, right.
Stuff.
Like pour epoxy over.
Yeah. Some kind of stuff. Good one.
Wild.
Now, let me ask you.
Yeah.
I know that you'd like it if we were a little further along in the show, and I apologize that hasn't happened for you, but you're going to finish that gouged out and fixed guitar in a nice blonde, right? I mean, that's the central, that's the crux of it.
Yes, it is a 59. It's a top loader 59 Esquire is what it is, technically.
Boy, I bet everybody wants one of those.
Yeah, I'd love one.
Man.
Yeah. But, it's going to be blonde, like a see-through blonde.
So you can't just block in a 2x4 and let, you know, spackle it over and hose it down candy apple red.
No, it has to look right. And, you know, so when I filled the routes, I had to be very careful in my selection of wood to try to match the grain little bit.
Yeah, you did it. You did a good job.
It wasn't bad. Thank you.
Yeah, I liked it.
Should we take some calls?
We should try it.
I think we have a call, not calls plural, but a call. Let's go to the phones.
Hi, my name is Rusty Shackelford. I actually have a question about a mandolin. I have an A string that keeps slipping a little bit out of tune pretty consistently, and all the other strings stay in tune pretty fine. I noticed on the tuning key there's a little screw on the back of it. If I tighten that screw, should that fix the slipping problem? I just want to see if that's a step I could take before taking it to a local luthier. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for your time and your show. It's great. Have a good day.
Thank you, Rusty.
Good one.
That's Rusty Shackelford.
Yeah, I know.
Did he say where he was from?
No.
Where are you from, Rusty?
Probably made up that name anyway.
Yeah, it's a pseudonym, as they say.
I'd like to adopt it myself.
Yeah.
He's got a mandolin question of it, so that's another proof that you're not screening these things.
Right. Well,
snuck right through.
I allow mandolin questions.
Well, that's great.
I just don't work on them any longer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, it crosses over to guitars, really. It's just a tuner. Now, there are typically two different kind of screws that could be, three actually, on a tuning machine. The first kind would be the mounting screw, and that should be tight no matter what. The second kind would be the type of screw that's on the very end of the knob.
Oh, yes.
And that's like a tension screw. On some, you know, sealed tuners have a screw on the end of the knob that you can tighten and make the tension a little bit tighter on the tuner. The third kind of screw that this is probably what he's talking about is on an open back tuner. you have a screw that mounts the gear to the capstan, the shaft.
Yeah.
And that's probably what he's talking about. And sure, if that screw's loose, go ahead and tighten it up. But it's not a tension adjustment. It just should be snug.
Yeah.
Right? And it's probably, my guess is, Rusty, it's probably not the cause of your A-string slipping. Oftentimes, and I know, you know, a lot of players, this doesn't cross their mind, but 9 times out of 10, when I hear this complaint, the problem is that the string is hanging up in the nut.
Yeah. Yep.
And so as you play it, you know, if it's catching in the nut, say you bend the string a little bit, it goes sharp. Well, the string can't glide smoothly through this nut slot. It keeps binding up. And so you tune it, and the tension doesn't equalize from the length of string from the nut to the bridge and the length of the string from the nut to the tuner. You get different tension sometimes on those two spans of string. And then as you play it, as you tune it, as you bend notes, as you fret it, these inconsistencies of string tension go back and forth, and the string is just binding in the nut. So that's my guess of what's going on. You might need, a really good solution is just some graphite in that nut slot, and that'll help. But if the slot is actually cut too tight, so it's squeezing the string, you might have to have that slot widened out just a little bit with the proper file.
Good one. That was an all-purpose Luthery question.
Yeah. But that's my guess on what's going on.
I guess that your guess is right.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Could be.
Do you have any more buttons?
I think that that's it for questions. Let me look. I think that's it. Yeah. Let's do a couple of emails.
Please do.
Letters. We get letters. We get stacks and stacks of letters.
I need to settle a dispute. See that? Just starts right away.
Yeah.
Do you really need the ground wire sandwiched between the bridge and the body of a telly? That's a question from Bill in Nottingham, New Hampshire.
Bill.
Yep.
The answer is, like most of these things,
it depends.
It depends. That's correct. It really does depend. So most Telecaster-style guitars don't need a ground wire running to the bridge. And the reason why is because if you look at the underside of a Telecaster pickup, it has a plate there, the copper-plated grounding plate, base plate.
Yeah.
They call it an elevator plate.
Oh.
But it's also a grounding plate, and it's hardwired, grounded to the negative side of the pickup. And when the screws pass through that plate and get mounted to the bridge, all that metal-on-metal contact grounds your bridge.
Hmm.
So you don't have to run a separate ground wire to the bridge like you would have to if you didn't have a metal plate that's grounded on the bottom of the pickup. So it really just depends on whether or not your pickup has a grounded mounting plate on the bottom of it, like most Tele pickups do.
Interesting. It's like a self-grounding bridge plate or bridge assembly. You could patent that.
I think they did.
See what I'm talking about?
But that's why you don't need a separate ground wire. But if you know, there are pickups, there are Tele bridge pickups that don't have that base plate. They do exist. You know, usually it's some weird one-off thing like a lace sensor or something, you know.
Something they did on purpose, huh?
Something, yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah. So in that case, Yes, you need to run a separate ground wire, but it's not very common.
Okay, and would you run it to the, it ends up going into the input jack?
It, you can run it to the back of a volume pot or, okay, you know, typically that's what you would do. It's just like the ground wire that goes to the tremolo claw on a Stratocaster.
Yeah.
That grounds the bridge. So, and that's usually soldered to the back of one of the pots.
That on establishes the other end. Ground. Well, mm-hmm. Good.
That oh, yeah.
Way to kick it off. Let me try this one. Hi, I was interested in purchasing one of your aged replica 50s Bakelite telepick guards, but was wondering if there's any chance for some customization.
Why, sure. Well, yep. Wait a minute.
Hold on. Well, tentatively, stand by. Specifically, I'm building a Telecaster with a P90 in the neck position. Diminishing interest? Is there any chance you could route out the different pickup configuration? If not, I suppose I could get the Esquire version and route it myself. Mm. There he's all about solutions. In addition, I can appreciate the aging process. Would it be possible to request light wear on the pick guard, say light distress, no splatter or string shadow? Thank you for your time, Art.
Cool.
I like that one. That was well written.
You bet. Thanks, Art. Yeah, light aging is no problem. I'll do a new looking one or a slightly aged one, whatever you want. That's not a problem. The P90 pickup hole for the neck pickup is a little bit tricky because if you think about it, it depends on whether or not the guitar in question already is routed for a P90. Because there's no standard placement for a P90 pickup route in a Telecaster. Yeah.
Interesting. There you go. You'd have to have that.
So is it lined up perfectly with, if I route a pick guard and send it to you for a P90, will it match exactly the existing P90 route in your guitar? Probably not. So if it's already routed for a P90, you'd best be served by ordering the Esquire one and then routing it yourself. If it's not already routed, then I can just center it and line it up where I would put it and send it to you, and then you can use the pick guard as a template to where how you'll route the body out.
Yeah.
So it depends on if your guitar's already routed out or not.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on here with the no splatter? String shadow, I think I could imagine.
So those Bakelite lacquered Telecaster pick guards.
That's right, they're lacquered, yeah.
There's a whole guitar nerds like myself.
Yeah.
There's a whole array of wear that happens on those.
And they have specific and nuanced
they
names.
They have specific nuanced names.
Wouldn't you know? That's these right. Guitar nerds yeah. are not yeah. even messing around.
So spatter wear is like little, it really looks like little specks
little
of
or something
of
like
spatter.
A pitted
yeah.
windshield.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll get spatter wear. They kind of have striations in them.
Mm-hmm.
Through some kind of manufacturing process at the Fender factory, if you look at them in just the right light, they kind of have pinstripe striations in the lacquer. So I replicate that.
Whoa.
There'll be like a wear mark off to the treble side often. Splatter wear, you know. There's a whole, if you want to see those, I sell those. You can go to my pinupcustomguitars.com and click the, I don't remember if the tab is called shop or buy. I think it's called shop.
Click them all.
Yeah. And there's replica Bakelite pick guards for sale there. You can see what I'm talking about.
Now, aren't those a little bit more difficult to drill? Are they more brittle and prone to breakage?
They are a little bit more brittle, but they're easy enough to drill and
so
machine.
So you can do a P90 yeah. fairly well.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good one. We learned a lot. I'll try this other one. Hi, Eric and Nat. Thank you so much for your wonderful podcast.
Thanks for listening.
That's great. I have learned so much about guitar repair, guitar construction, and just cool stuff about guitars. I am a high school music teacher, and I really appreciate the knowledge I've gained from your podcast about guitar repairs, as the upkeep of the various guitars in the music department takes a lot of time. I am frequently changing strings, tightening inputs, fixing intonation, putting knobs back on, and soldering wires back onto pickups after students have twisted a loose knob so much that the wires get pulled off. Whoa.
I've seen that.
Dang it. I have two questions for the podcast. Number one, enumerated. Any tips on how I can prevent input jacks and tone volume knobs coming loose on school electric guitars? Squire Strats, Epiphone Les Pauls, etc. Is it possible to double nut the knobs and jacks to lock them? Number two, my own personal main guitar I play at home and at gigs is an Epiphone Broadway Elite. At a recent gig, I accidentally knocked the pick guard, and the binding has come away from about a third of the pick guard. It's got a bound pick guard, man.
Yeah.
What is the best way to repair the binding? Do you think super glue would be okay to stick the binding back on? Thanks so much. Yes, indeed. Josh Barkwith.
Thanks, Josh.
It's a great one. Music teacher.
Yeah, man. To get those knobs and jacks, to keep them tight and not coming loose, you know, this isn't something that I would recommend for every situation, but if you're a music teacher who's dealing with this all the time and kids are rough on things, you know.
Yeah, kids these days.
I know it. I've got kids of my own. So, you might be able to double nut them, but usually there's not quite enough threads sticking out to accomplish that. So if you don't already have lock washers, use lock washers and just tighten them up real tight. The extreme thing you can do here is get some thread locker. It's not that extreme, but some Loctite thread locker. The blue stuff, it comes in different grades.
Yeah,
I can't
remember
what.
Red too, doesn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember what the blue stuff is. But that's what I use. You put a little bit of blue Loctite thread locker on there, and then put the nut on, and that liquid, that blue liquid, sets up and keeps the nut from coming loose.
Well, there's a good tip.
And you could force it off. It's removable, you know, but it really will help keep that locked into place.
Good.
Yeah. What did he have another question?
Yeah, oh,
yeah.
The binding.
His bound pick guard is coming apart. You know, super glue gets out of hand fast, but if you're very careful and, you know, have maybe some Q-tips on the ready.
Because you don't want to have globs. And
yeah.
Is that the fear?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you could use a little bit of super glue to stick that back on. The other thing you could do is probably you could just dab some acetone on the binding and then use masking tape and tape it back on.
Hold it for a second.
And that acetone will kind of melt the binding back onto the pickguard.
Good.
Yeah. Those are the two methods that I would recommend. Super glue is fine, but it can be, man, it can go sideways fast.
And then you're stuck with it.
Yeah.
How about another one?
Sure.
Hello, Eric and Nat. I have a Yamaha acoustic guitar, and I am trying to get the most out of it and trying to get the best sound out of this guitar as I can.
Why not?
All those things. I've been told by a few people you can get better sound by changing out the plastic bridge pins, bridge saddle, and nut to bone for a better sound. What's your thought on this, and if it's a waste of money to do such? Steve in Houston, TX.
Howdy, Steve.
Yep.
How's Texas?
It's way down there, man. It's big.
You were just there.
It was big the whole time. You know what else? They got trees everywhere. Green pastures.
See, when I think of Texas, I think cactuses.
I know. They did have a couple of those.
So were you in, like, West Texas?
I made it all the way to...
Not the city, but...
Oh, what's the name of that old cattle town where they'd start these cattle drives?
San Antonio?
El Paso. Starts with a B. Dang it. I can't remember. Shoot, that's too bad. But it was not far from San Antonio.
Did you go through Lubbock?
I did not, because that's about 48 hours away. It's a big state.
Wow.
No, I went up.
It's bigger than most countries, man.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. I went through El Paso and Van Horn, Texas, and a bunch of little tiny places, and ended up at, starts with a B.
Huh.
It was cool.
Well, I hope that answers your question, Steve. Thanks for calling in.
You got so distracted.
What did he want to know?
In order, one at a time, plastic bridge pins.
Yes. Bridge saddle and nut.
So, assuming the saddle.
You want me to take these one at a time?
Yeah. Well, maybe you don't need to. You can group them up.
Well, here's the deal. You're asking me, who I make a living installing bone nuts and saddles on guitars. So my answer is yes. Now, are you going to notice a giant difference? Truthfully, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Probably not.
No, I think it will.
Will you notice a difference? I think so. Is it giant? No. Bone is the traditional material to use for nuts and saddles on a stringed instrument. Hundreds of years, maybe even thousands, that's what they've been using.
No kidding.
So I like it because aesthetically, I think it looks better than plastic. I think plastic is the mark of a cheap guitar. So if I see a guitar with a plastic nut, I'm not interested, man. It's a cheap guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. It's a nice dress up to get to get rid of the plastic and get nice nut and a nice saddle made of bone. And sure, why not bridge pins? Although, of all the things that matter, the bridge pins, I think, matter the least. Now, people are going to disagree with that. I can hear them right now. They're yelling at their
grumbling
podcast
device. They're shaking their fists at their podcast.
Because I've talked to them. I know. People tell me, man, I switched out the bridge pins on this, and wow, did it make a difference.
Well, new world.
Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
Right.
But it's better quality, and I like that. And I think that it does make small tonal differences, absolutely. See, the trick is that the string is transferring energy to the guitar, which resonates, right?
Precious, scarce energy.
And any little way that you can facilitate that is going to improve the guitar. What it really is the trick, if you have a loose fitting saddle and you replace that with a nice tight fit, that's a bigger deal than anything. So make sure whoever's doing it does it right. Like, you want a nice tight fitting saddle made of bone, and if you previously had a loose fitting plastic saddle, then you'll notice a big difference, I think.
Yeah, that's a good one. So it is not a waste of money.
No, I don't think so.
No. All right. Well, I'm glad we did a little Texas geography.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Eric, love the podcast. Last episode, you described that refinish job that had been covered with truck bed liner.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, I had successfully extinguished.
You saw
that
one, right?
Yeah, that it was wrong. Oh, I worked on that one.
Yeah.
Ooh. Boo. A while back, I found this YouTube video documenting the build process of a Dan Electro style body, and he actually used white truck bed liner coating on only the edges of the body in place of the usual tape wrapping. I thought that was a pretty clever idea. Just wondering what you think about it. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, he sent me a little YouTube video that I watched.
That sounds... I don't mean to preempt you. You go ahead.
Well, the guy, he's making Dan Electro style guitars.
Mm-hmm.
He masked it off so that only the body edge was exposed.
Yeah.
And then he took a roller like you would roll paint, latex paint in your house, you know?
Wow.
Just a roller from Home Depot, and rolled truck bed liner all the way around the guitar.
As it swiveled on a cake decorating stand
and then, or something. And then peeled off the masking tape.
I bet it looked great.
It's not how I would do it. Let's just say that. More power to him, and I like the ingenuity. I like thinking outside the box. That's kind of nice. And there is one upside, which is, you know, sometimes on Dan Electro's, that tape that goes all the way around the body, sometimes that starts peeling off.
Yeah, it's almost a signature piece of those things. He won't have that trouble.
He won't have that problem, but it also doesn't look right, in my opinion.
Well, sometimes, like this one right over there is kind of rubberized looking. It's kind of
the,
wrinkled,
the copper,
textured, yeah.
My copper Dan Electro
short scale
bass. That thing is so cool, man.
Yeah, it's dope.
Yeah.
Totally cool.
Yeah. I like the old Naugahyde
kind of
tape.
Wallpapery.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, the reissues, they have a real problem with the binding tape coming off.
I should know.
And that tape on the reissues does not look anything like the vintage tape that they used on real Dan Electros made in the 50s and 60s. It's very different.
No, I think it's actual tape versus like a vinyl.
Yeah, but it's like marine vinyl. It's like it's upholstery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In cool colors.
Mm-hmm.
Good one.
Let's take a little break.
Let's do.
We'll be right back with more.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Guys, my favorite beverage, by far, my favorite beverage, besides water, my favorite beverage is coffee. And my favorite brand of coffee is Apex. Check out Apex Coffee online. Go to apexcoffeeroasters.com. They ship coffee, and this is premium. This is I think it's the best coffee you can get. It's my favorite, the best coffee. They'll ship it to you. They ship it to me once a month. The postman brings me Apex coffee, and it's just as fresh as can be, and it's the most delicious, beautiful coffee. Check it out. ApexCoffeeRoasters.com. They're based in Waco, Texas, but you don't have to be. They'll ship it right to you. While you're there, you can use my promo code PINUP, that's P-I-N-U-P, to get 10% off your order. Check it out. ApexCoffeeRoasters.com. Thunder Road Guitars is based in Seattle, but they ship guitars all over the world. I've known Frank at Thunder Road Guitars for over 20 years, and this guy is as solid as they come. He's a straight shooter. They're real people offering real service. Thunder Road Guitars carries excellent used, vintage, new, and rare instruments, as well as amplifiers and a wide selection of pedals. Thunder Road Guitars is your best source for fine, used, vintage, and new guitars. They're an independently owned family business that thrives on great customer service and the love of instruments. Check them out online, thunderroadguitars.com. Give Frank a call. Tell them you heard it on the Fret Files podcast. In fact, they have a promo code. If you buy anything on their website, that's thunderroadguitars.com, use my promo code FRETFILES, all one word, FRETFILES, for 10% off. That's thunderroadguitars.com, or you can always give them a call at 206-678-5248.
Hello, Eric.
Howdy.
Do you shield your builds with copper? Have you always? I have one of your guitars and was wondering if it's shielded without opening it up. Okay. And wondered what, if amenable, it would entail to swap out to a roasted maple neck. Mm. Thanks, Matt in Seattle. You know that guy?
Thanks, Matt.
I bet you do.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I knew a lot of guys in Seattle, guitar people. Yep. I knew several Matts, so yeah. I'm not sure which Matt
one of them is asking
some questions.
Yes,
No, I don't shield my builds with copper. I do not. I've found, and if you read my book, I talk about this.
Which book is that again?
Oh, Solid Sound. You can get it at solidsoundbook.com for the paltry sum of $22. I will ship it right to your door.
Mother's Day coming up.
Mm-hmm. Does your mom have a copy?
No, she doesn't.
So no, I don't. If you read my book, I talk about that. I actually find a lot of times people shield guitars and then they'll bring it to me because they'll say, well, I shielded my guitar, but now the hum is worse.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it's because they didn't properly ground things. And then oftentimes, you know, the cavities of guitars are actually pretty tight quarters. And it's real easy for the lug of a switch or a pot to come in contact with that shielding and short things out. And then you end up with zero sound. And that's no fun on a gig. So, and most of the hum that comes from electric guitars is actually coming from the pickups, not the wiring. So shielding all the, shielding the cavity.
That's a good principle. Yep.
It can help a little bit. It's usually more trouble than it's worth. If not everything is exactly properly grounded, exactly right, it'll make things worse. And you've got the potential of things shorting out against the sides of the cavity. So I don't shield my builds. Single coil guitars hum a little bit, and that's something that I'm willing to live with because I like the way they sound.
Yeah.
What was his other question?
He wants. He might want to swap out to a roasted maple neck.
Sorry, man. I won't make one-off custom necks.
Not going to retrofit.
But he's up in Seattle. He could. He could get in contact with Sound Guitar Works up there in Tacoma, and they'll make you a roasted maple neck.
They'll roast you one up.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Good one. Let's try this. Hi, Eric and Nat. First off, thanks so much for the show. I have learned so much from you guys. Please keep it up. I picked up a 1969 Silvertone flat top for $40.
Perfect.
As a project guitar. In order to build my skills on neck resets and other major repairs. What a perfect way to do 17 neck resets.
Yeah.
This one is indeed a project. It is indeed in need of a neck reset, of course. See the picture of the bridge.
He sent me a fun picture of the bridge of that guitar. I'm going to post it in the show notes.
It's getting a little out there.
Yeah,
huh?
You'll have to see.
Ooh. The heel is separating from the body. Yeah. The neck is warped into an up bow about 0.014 inches. Interesting, the decimals in the inches. Wow. Of relief with no strings. Is that right? That's like nothing.
People get so technical, man.
Well, that's like 0.004 an inch he measured.
That is the, that is the width of a B string.
Huh.
Just about.
All right.
Think about that.
Yeah. Already without strung up to pitch. There's no adjustable truss rod. Yeah. Yeah. The bridge needs to be replaced. The bridge plate is a mess. A back brace is missing. Just gone. A few questions for you.
I guess. Yeah. Let's hear them.
What is the best order of operations for the neck, for the neck reset, fixing the neck bow, and replacing the bridge? That's a great question.
Yeah.
How would you recommend...
Let's take these one at a time, shall we? Oh, I pulled up the picture of this bridge here to show Nat. Can you see that?
Oh, it's a dark mess. Stand by.
Somebody went and filed notches in the bridge so that the strings would sit lower.
Yeah, and I could see it visually, but not intellectually. I couldn't understand what I was seeing.
Yeah. That thing's got major ridges.
Well, and whittled it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Darn it.
Yeah, it's not good.
Okay, question.
It's a good looking guitar, man.
Number three. Oh, they're the coolest.
It's going to be a fun guitar.
Yeah, and $40.
$40 is a good deal. What's the order of operations?
For the big stuff, I think.
Yeah. Replacing the bridge.
He's gotta squash the neck.
He's gonna do a neck reset and he's gonna replace the bridge. So what I wanna do is let me think about that.
Well, does he have to straighten that neck first?
So the neck you're talking about, the up bow, is pretty minor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, because he's got those measurements of nearly nothing.
Yeah.
With no strings. Okay.
So, you could press the neck. He doesn't mention whether or not he has a neck press.
No.
Probably doesn't. So no. I don't know if you're going to like try to pull the frets and playing the fingerboard. I don't know what you're doing there. But if it were me, if it were in my shop, what I would do would be to replace the bridge first. Because when I reset the neck, I need to know where the bridge is at and where the saddle is in order for me to set the neck angle properly, right?
Yeah.
The neck should be a nice straight line that aims right about where the saddle meets the rest of the bridge.
Yeah.
If the bridge is thinned down or something, then that doesn't apply. We're talking about a full size, you know, full thickness bridge. So I would replace the bridge first, and then I would reset the neck, and then I would probably string it up and see what the neck looked like with string tension. And then at that point, if it needed to be pressed, I would heat press the neck to correct the upward bow.
Good one.
Yeah.
So that, like, the bridge and saddle, that's kind of the origin of this thing. That's like the foundation. And so from there, you orient everything else. I like that. Well, we got question group number two. How would you recommend fixing the bow neck? You kind of talked about that a little bit. How about this? Have you heard of compression fretting?
Yeah, he says, do you think compression fretting could work here? It could, yeah, and I've done that before. So compression fretting is when you use a tang that is a real tight fit, and you can actually crimp the tang to get a little bit more size out of the tang.
Yeah.
And that will actually compress the fingerboard wood and correct the warp a little bit. The problem with compression fretting is, if you think about this, the fret spacing, you get a lot more compression up in the upper register of the neck because the frets are closer together.
If it works, then it's going to mess that up a little bit.
So I typically don't do compression fretting. I did 20 years ago. I've done it before. But I use the neck heater now. I use a neck press. I think it's more predictable and easier.
Okay. You know? Good.
But compression fretting could work. It absolutely could in this situation.
Well, then he's got a catch-all. Anything else that comes to mind that I should be considering? Thanks, Alan. Little, you know, what am I missing? Big picture. He's got a flat silver tone flat top for $40.
Well, if you wanted to get rowdy.
Oh, yeah?
If you really wanted to get out there, you could take the fingerboard off and put a truss rod in. I mean, this is your $40 project guitar that you want to do everything to, right?
And it came in a basket.
So
there you go.
That's an option. Think about something like that.
And it's all dang near coming apart anyway, huh?
That it doesn't sound that fun to me.
Nah, he's going to learn. But, it's going to be great.
Yeah, that's an option.
Interesting.
Thanks, Alan.
You just set him off on a horrible journey. Let's try this one. Hello, on a guitar with a compound radius, is this, in this case, 12 to 16, how would you set the radius when adjusting the action? Thanks, Joe in Virginia.
Thanks, Joe. I'm picturing, so a lot of people use a little understring radius gauge to set a radius into the action when they're adjusting string height on a guitar that has individually adjustable saddles.
Okay.
I'm assuming that's what you're talking about here.
I'm going to go along with you.
He might be talking about an acoustic guitar that has a radiused saddle, though.
Because this is pretty flat, isn't it? 12 to 16?
Yeah. And
that's in inches, isn't it?
Yeah, and a lot of some acoustic guitars have that. So it starts out at 12, ends up at 16 up in the upper register. But basically what I would do, you know, when I'm setting the action, I don't care if it's a compound radius. I measure the distance from the fret to the string. And I measure that, you know, in the upper frets. I usually measure it off the 14th fret.
Okay.
Now, yeah. I know a lot of guys use the 12th fret. But you end up with the proper radius by measuring the string distance. The distance of the string from the top of the metal part of the fret.
It's kind of like measuring it directly. What is it? That's what it actually is.
Yeah. So, right. So
not you're fitting to a curve.
Okay. No. So you're matching the neck, not a number.
Yeah.
That's
imagine that.
That's the way I approach it.
What a philosophical shift. Think about that. I'm going to try another one because that one went fairly well. Hey, Eric. Love the show. Incredibly useful information. I have a 1957 Duosonic that I'm bringing back to life. Cool guitar. The body was stripped and refinished with some kind of clear coat. I want to restore its desert sand finish, so I plan on stripping and refinishing it.
I love that desert sand
color. It hardly gets better.
Yeah.
It is so cool with that gold anodized pickguard. I guess it's anodized. I shouldn't interject so much. A couple of questions. I have read that Duosonics of that era sometimes had an undercoat and sometimes did not. Were they using fuller plast on those early models, something else, or nothing at all? I assume I should use some sort of sealer before applying the desert sand. Should I just punt and wet sand what is there now and go from there? I've also read those guitars did not get a clear coat on top. Is that true? Finally, at some point along the way, someone decided to use copper-colored shielding paint in the cavity. God knows why. Those pickups are pretty quiet. Yeah, see the previous answer. Any recommendations on removing this unfortunate legacy from the 80s? Many thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Cool guitar.
Copper-colored shielding paint.
I think they have that, right? You can splay it. It's not the sheets of copper. It's
yeah.
You just hose it down.
Well, usually the shielding paint that I've seen is kind of a black colored stuff.
Oh.
It's a copper colored shielding paint. I've never really seen. I wonder if it's even conductive. You know, weird hobbyist might have just taken some testers
or leftover from the one of the finishes, you know.
Yeah. Copper paint. I'd be curious to test that with a multimeter, see if it even
if it does anything.
If it even has
visual
conductivity.
Well, I wonder if, like, during 1970, every kid that took a shop class was thinking, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to refinish my dad's guitar.
Yeah.
It's going to be so cool. And I'm going to spray paint that Tweed amp black.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
They all did.
Oh, yeah. So,
drum sets, everything.
There were so many questions.
I know, and he said a couple, and I was going to count.
So Fender didn't have a real, like, they obviously didn't have, like, some permanent list of rules hanging in the paint room. Like, you must use this base coat, and you must use this primer, and you must do and this. And
even
then
if
that,
they
and
did.
This. They didn't follow their own rules because they end up all over the map.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fuller plast, I think, happened a little bit later. I don't think they were using that by 57. I could be wrong, but I think it was early 60s that they started working that. And that is like a fuller plast is a, it's basically poly. Plast as in plastic.
And it's a primer
kind of
thing?
It's an undercoat
that
they would use. Yeah. And then they would lacquer on top of that. So, his guitar, 57 Duosonic, it's refinished with some kind of clear coat. I would be tempted to use that as a base coat. You could strip it off if you want to go nuts. But, you know, if you just sand it, and if it's done well.
Doesn't have lumps and bumps.
Yeah.
And scuff it up, huh?
If it's a compatible paint with whatever you want to spray on it, I would be tempted to just use that as my undercoat. You're correct. A lot of those guitars that were desert sand didn't have a top coat. So if you want to go for an authentic look, just spray it with desert sand and leave it at that. I like to put a top coat on them because then I can get lacquer checking, and that's fun.
That is cool.
So it's up to you, but if you want the authentic look, yeah, desert sand usually doesn't have those on Duosonics and things like that. It usually doesn't have a top coat.
Probably saved a little money in 1957 on that.
I mean, you have to think. They were student model guitars, absolutely.
Cool.
As far as getting that shielding paint off,
Well, he said God knows why.
That's going to be...
We don't know.
A lot of Q-tips and acetone, maybe?
Well...
It'd be real hard to sand off inside the cavities.
Oh, it'd be awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it ain't going to happen.
If you were going to strip the whole guitar, then that stuff would probably come off. You know, you can buy like a big gallon,
big old
metal jug of paint stripper, the gel.
Make an awful mess everywhere.
Just pour it on there and let it saturate into the paint. And it'll just scrape off, and you can scrape off all the clear coat and that shielding paint.
But not easily.
That's no, correct. No. Yeah. It is a mess. It's an awful,
just
smelly.
Dump it on there and let
terrible
it work its
mess.
Dark magic, but not well. Good one.
All right. One more.
Let's try this. Hello, Eric and Nat. I love the show and will keep listening for as long as you make it. I've recently started building guitars that are closer to a Gibson style with a set neck and angled headstock. In an effort to help prevent the dreaded headstock breaks, I've thought about making the truss rod adjustment at the heel through the neck pickup route. Okay. I know you aren't a Gibson guy, but I wanted your take on this. Would removing a pickup to adjust the truss rod be a major headache for a repair tech? Should I opt for the wheel adjustment instead? Does having a heel adjust truss rod cause more tension on the neck at the heel? Gosh, I am not visualizing these very well. Do you think this would be a problem with a set neck? Thank you for sharing your knowledge with the world. You've helped me and many others so much on our journeys. You guys rock. Steven.
Thanks, Steven.
Well, that is nice as pie.
People do listen to this show, you know?
Gosh, that's nice.
I forget that it's actually working, you know?
There you go. Draw some strength from that.
Yeah, it's good. So, to answer your questions, I've no idea. I've never done this.
Well, and it's a little out there.
I don't build Gibson-style set neck guitars, and it is a little bit out there. You don't often see set neck guitars with heel truss rod adjustments, and a lot of the reason for that, I'm guessing, you know, I'm thinking about like a Les Paul or a 335 in my mind. The neck pickup sits right up against the fingerboard. Yep. There's no room for a heel truss adjustment. I guess you could, just put it in the pickup cavity, and it would be a little bit of a pain in the neck to take the pickup out to adjust the truss rod, but is that any worse than a Fender, really? An old Fender where you got to take the whole neck off to adjust it?
So
don't let that dictate what you're going to do. The wheel is cool because it's easy.
What's a wheel?
Oh, have you ever seen, heel adjust truss rod wheel?
Is that a Fender thing in
the
70s or something?
No.
I never have.
But you can stick like a Allen Rancher screwdriver in it. It's a wheel with holes in it, and you can stick a tool in it and spin it.
I have seen that. Okay. I was thinking like you dial it up like it's a notched gear or something. Okay.
My problem with the wheel is that I'm so traditional that if I see a guitar with that, I'm not interested automatically.
Might as well have a plastic nut.
Yeah. And that's just me. I'm just a traditional guy. So, he also asked Does it put more tension on the...
Yeah, and I... On the neck at the heel, and I just... Does a heel adjust put more... Cause more tension on the neck at the heel?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well...
Here's something to consider. I don't know what kind of Gibson-style guitars you're making. If you're making SGs, like that style, or Les Paul Juniors, you know, that neck joint... I've seen plenty of... vintage Gibsons with neck joint problems.
Because it's so thin. Yeah, I don't especially know. There's not much SGs. Material.
There's just, no. They're dainty, man. Yeah. It's not just the headstock.
They're flirting with disaster.
Yeah. This is why Gibson started putting the volute on the back of the headstock. Like behind the nut, there's like a little, mm-hmm. it comes yeah. out to a little ridge there.
Diamondy ship's.
To try to reinforce that, mm-hmm. you know. So maybe you could do a volute, although I've seen plenty of broken Gibsons with volute headstocks too.
People find a way, don't they? They're like yeah. those kids that the other guy was teaching.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, most of the Gibsons you see with neck problems are mahogany. The necks are mahogany.
Okay.
So here's an idea. Use maple. I don't know. Or put in the truss rod backwards. I don't know. You'll have to experiment with it and let us know. Because this is, I'm just spitballing here because this is not my wheelhouse. But I do have plenty of experience with guitars, so you'd think I'd have more of an opinion on this. But
well, not that specific niche kind of thing. You're more janitorial.
Yeah, I'm just a guitar janitor.
There you go.
I'm just a guitar janitor. Now, I would tend, if I were doing what you're doing here, Stephen, I would go traditional. I would do a single action truss rod that's adjustable at the headstock. That's just me.
Yeah, why? Yeah.
That is just me.
There you go.
Thanks for tuning in, y'all. We do appreciate it. And, we will talk to you next time. If you want to participate in the show,
and you should,
and you really should, you can go to my website. That's ericdaw.com. Click the contact link and fire off your question there. The other way to do it is to call or text 757-774-8482. Just leave a message there and we'll use it as part of the show. 757-774-8482. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.